Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's follow up on our interview with Senator Gillibrand now with Melinda Henneberger, Editor-in-Chief of Politics Daily. Hi, Melinda. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thank you very much.
And we can open the phones on any of these things, the politics of the tax cuts, heading into a showdown, apparently, not only between Democrats and Republicans, but maybe between Democrats in Congress and the White House. Also, the Zadroga bill. We'll talk about Charlie Rangel a little bit. So any Washington news that you want to talk about, listeners, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, Melinda, you just heard Senator Gillibrand, and we have the Democratic House and Senate trying to play offense against tax cuts for the rich while the president negotiates with the Republicans for an extension of all those cuts. Here is Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, talking yesterday about what they're going to do in the special Saturday session tomorrow.
So we're going to have cloture votes on our priorities on Saturday. Our priorities are very, very simple and direct. One, we want to make sure the American people know we believe that the tax cuts should be extended for people making less than $250,000 a year. And just to make sure the American people understand we do not support giving tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, we're going to have a second vote on that.
And that's the Schumer bill for people earning $1 million a year or more. That million and first dollar would be taxed at a higher rate instead of over $250,000. So, Melinda, are the Democrats in Congress and the White House coordinating with each other like good cop and bad cop? Or are the president and congressional Democrats really on different tracks here?
Well, if they're coordinating, they're hiding it so well that I think probably they're not. I've never seen them be such good actors in the past. I don't think so. I think that they really, that the White House really does believe that the American people want to see an attempt to compromise. And I think that that's true, that independent voters in particular want to see a spirit of compromise. But since we're not going to get one on the other side, I think that all compromise will come from Democrats. I'm not positive where this is going. I mean, this clip you played from Harry Reid saying we want to make sure people know that we're not interested in, additional benefits for millionaires, that's the Republican point, is that this is all a PR exercise and that these votes can't possibly yield any real results.
So here is another example of how, at least on the surface, we really have factions of the Democratic Party at odds with each other right now. This is a MoveOn.org ad that targets President Obama.
President Obama.
Hi, Barack.
Mr. President Obama.
What up, B?
Hi, I'm Monique. This is Allie. I'm asking for her. You stand tough and you don't extend these tax cuts to the richest Americans.
I voted for you back in 2008.
We voted for you because for the first time in our lifetime, a politician was actually laying out a plan that reinforced the values that we've come to believe in as Americans.
I want to say thank you for all the hard work that you do.
But we, the people, want you back and need you back.
What's happened to that bold, progressive man, the elected president, 2008?
The guy who stands for all the people and is not going to let himself get pushed around.
Mr. President, please do not compromise with the Republicans about extending the Bush tax cuts.
So, Melinda Henneberger.
I think that that's really widely felt in the Democratic Party. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, they put up with a lot, they gave him the benefit of the doubt, they defended him when others didn't, and this is really kind of feels like the last straw for a lot of people saying, you know, if you can't defend against growing the deficit by providing, you know, more help to people who need it the least when we're not giving help to the unemployed, then, you know, what good is having a Democratic Party?
And the Republicans argue it's not really help for the middle class because the tax cuts will create jobs, but they'll go round and round on that with competing economists. So politically, do you think the Democrats or the White House really needs to trade tax cuts for millionaires to get unemployment benefits? because that seems to be the deal that the White House is working on with the Republican leadership.
Right.
Here we have the worst extended joblessness since the Great Depression. The new numbers out today, worse than expected, would seem to add fuel to the Democrats' fire about unequivocally extending the unemployment benefits. Couldn't they shame the Republicans on this one and win?
Shame? I don't know. There's so much feeling that the Democrats' hand is so weak that it's not even clear that they could actually get more stimulus. I mean, this extending unemployment benefits would be part of a larger package of more stimulus, and I'm not even sure they can get it. So,
well, just stay with me on the politics of this for a minute. Looking toward 2012, which is what mm-hmm. everybody wants to do now,
right.
that it's 10 minutes after the election of 2010, if the Democrats are saying over and over again, these Republicans wanted to give tax breaks to millionaires while not extending unemployment benefits to the long-term jobless. Is that not a political winner with swing voters in 2012 on its own?
You would think it would be, and yet, based on the experience of a month ago, it wasn't. I mean, that was the same argument made this year, really, that... This has been what the argument has been over, and the independents went overwhelmingly to the right this year, despite everything you just said. So I think there's a lot of feeling in the Republican Party that they can make that case, even though it doesn't seem to stand on its you wouldn't think so, but
so
they
we have
believe
the House and Senate Democrats on a confrontation track with the Republicans, the White House on a negotiation track. How do you see this going tomorrow in the Senate and beyond?
I don't think that the Democrats can do anything on this issue, and I think that in the end, every signal we get from the White House is that they're willing to make these cuts permanent. The Republicans have even turned down extending them temporarily. So I think the most likely outcome is that they will be made permanent, which doesn't exactly square with all the talk about deficit reduction.
Mark in Teaneck, you're on WNYC. Hey, Mark.
Hi. I've been listening to this debate very carefully, and it seems like all of the Republicans are totally on message with the statement that if you don't extend the tax cuts, it will hurt small businessmen and thus hurt job creation. And
right.
I'm wondering why the Democrats don't simply call their bluff and say, okay, for verifiable small businessmen, we won't extend the tax cuts, but for the lawyers and corporate executives and investment bankers and all the other people for whom the tax extension of the tax cuts will not create jobs, let it go through.
Yeah, that's what they're really trying to push. I mean, that's this Schumer bill. That's what they're trying to do. But I, for some reason, the message from the Republicans does seem to be working, at least at this moment, with independents. You know, you had Mike Pence, a Republican from Indiana, arguing that his bill that he's already introduced with Senator Jim DeMint to make them all permanent, make all these tax cuts permanent. He's talking about so no family farmer will ever see a tax increase. Well, you know, there aren't that many family farmers who make the level of income that we're really discussing here.
And yet it lands. And yet that argument lands.
Right.
Tony in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tony.
Hiya. Well, my position is I don't understand why the Democrats can't get together and then coordinate, even with the White House. It seems to me that the White House and the Senate are in disagreement. Schumer's in disagreement with other members of the Senate too. First, I think Mr. Schumer is wrong. I mean, he has now set the base at $1 million, and if the Republicans would want to negotiate, which of course is a pipe dream, the $1 million becomes the base. You have to go up from the $1 million. My position is, I think the Democrats should hold firm, and the president should stop being a wimp and let all the tax breaks end.
Well, that's
period.
Tony, thank you for your call. But Melinda, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly one of the reasons that the Democrats are in a politically weak position. Remember, the tax cuts are all scheduled to expire at the end of the year. So if Congress is completely deadlocked and does nothing, if there is no deal, then the tax cuts expire on all middle-class Americans and everybody else. Taxes will go up for everybody, including the middle class and working class who pay income taxes. And so if the Democrats, you know, call their bluff and the Republicans call their bluff and nothing happens, then taxes go up for everybody. So I guess that the Democratic and Republican strategists must be talking in their back rooms and saying, well, who loses more? Obviously, that's losing proposition for both parties, but they must.
Then we can have a festival of mutual recrimination. But I think it's unlikely that they're going to be allowed to expire. I think that you are going to have a deal. And again, I think that what the president is, you know, the big question is, what is the president thinking? What he's thinking are the focus groups that tell him that independents want him to compromise, and that's what he's doing.
And of course,
so I think it's all for his. I mean, it looks like it's gated to the next presidential election.
The pure yes, and if it's geared toward the next presidential election, then President Obama apparently sees a path to victory for himself through the center,
right?
That is at odds with the Democrats in the Senate and the House, who might see a path to victory for themselves through standing firm on partisan principle.
That's exactly correct. And I think that there's something to be said for both. I mean, I think that, you know, he can't be reelected without the center, and yet the left feels that they can't be reelected without standing for something.
Al in Westchester wants to bring the estate tax piece of this into the conversation. Al, thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks, Brian. Well, the federal tax on decedents' estates was temporarily, so they say, repealed for 2010, but as you say, will be automatically renewed in 2011 unless the repeal is extended or made permanent.
Are you a lawyer, by the way? I think only lawyers call dead people decedents.
I read a lot of law books. I understand it raised about $52 billion a year for the U.S. Treasury, and of course this year it has raised nothing. And at a time of gargantuan deficits, it's an obscenity that to give tax breaks to people who need them the least, and at the same time deny benefits to the 9/11 workers who have gotten sick as a result of their work, or to deny extended unemployment benefits. For people who are out of work through no fault of their own.
Well,
thank you.
I agree with everything you said.
But politically, the estate tax, for people who don't know, for decedents of 2010, anybody who died this year, no estate tax, right? That was the hole that he was talking about in the law.
A lot of savvy rich people died this year. Or will before December 31st.
Well,
right?
You say will before December 31st, and it sounds like a joke, but I saw a Republican on television last night, I forget which member of Congress, saying, look, if we don't continue the repeal of the estate tax, then, and this is going to go up to a very large number for people who have estates that are large enough, it's 55%, right?
Right.
55% of the estate. So they say, here you're going to be with grandma or grandpa on December 31st in some tenuous position of close to life, close to death. Do you pull the plug on life support? Those horrifyingly wrenching decisions that people sometimes have to make. And some people are going to be in that position on December 31st thinking, well, do we pull the plug on grandpa a day early so that we get 55% more of our inheritance? It's a horrible position to be in. You're shrugging that off. Is it? And what about the size of the estate tax? Because let's do some facts here. First of all, I think that's only on estates more than $3.5 million. Lower than that, there is no estate tax. Is that right or wrong?
I don't think it's that high. I'm not certain, but I don't think that's right.
I thought it had gone up to 3.5 and was even scheduled to go to 5. And I realize there are different versions of it floating around. So that's one myth about it. Maybe somebody can call in or post to our site at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, or producers, maybe we can look that up and get exactly where the estate tax kicks in on how big an estate. But then on those big estates, still 55% is enough for the Republicans to make an argument that any tax at 55% is confiscatory.
Right. And they certainly will. Well, one of the great bits of theater of this debate this week was the representative from Queens and part of the Bronx, Joe Crowley, who brought a photo of Leona Helmsley and her dog Trouble to the House floor to say, you know, this little dog who inherited $12 million from Leona Helmsley, you know, under the Republican plan, if Trouble doesn't get a tax break, nobody else should. So, you know, thank goodness they're looking out for Trouble.
Leona, only the little people pay taxes.
Right.
Helmsley, which will bring us to Charles Rangel in a minute. But let's talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They're hoping for a vote on that after the Pentagon report on repealing it came out this week with Defense Secretary Gates urging repeal.
Right.
Here's John McCain, the senator who used to be the maverick moderate, stepping out as the senator from the anti-gay lobby on this one. Listen.
This survey says nearly 60% of respondents in the Marine Corps and Army Combat Arms say they believe there would be a negative impact on their unit's effectiveness in this context. Among Marine Combat Arms, the number was 67%. Nearly 60% of the Army Combat Armed Soldiers and 66.5, two-thirds of the Marine Corps Combat Armed Troops voiced these concerns about repeal.
So, Melinda Henneberger, Editor-in-Chief of Politics Daily, why is John McCain stepping out as the lead opponent of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
I think that's a question shared by Cindy McCain and Meghan McCain, who do not share his views. He seems to be prepared to go down with the ship on this one. He's the last man standing. I mean,
and he just got reelected, so he doesn't have to worry about the politics of it. Presumably, six years.
No, he obviously really cares about this. He and his buddy Lindsey Graham. But you know, I mean, those who were polled, you know, said that the troops are ready. That Admiral Mullen said the troops are ready for this. There's every indication that they really are ready for this, even those who said that it might make them want to get out of service earlier. You know, Gates said yesterday, Defense Secretary Gates said, you know, they can't just up and leave. So I think that there are even people you might have expected in these hearings to side with McCain did not. You had Joe Lieberman saying, you know, he's a moderate guy, saying, you know, it's just wrong and un-American to discriminate in this way. And Ben Nelson, another very conservative Democrat, saying, you know, doesn't the current system of Don't Ask, Don't Tell undermine the values of integrity in the military? And Mullen said, yes, it does. So, you know, McCain, I think, is really sort of out on his own on this one. There was even the mother of a gay man who helped storm the cockpit of Flight 93 on 9/11, who was eulogized by McCain very beautifully, said, you know, did you know he's gay? Don't you think you ought to be listening a little more closely to your wife on this issue?
But McCain is not out on his own on this politically, because they've got the votes to block at the moment. If he filibusters, as he has threatened to do, they don't have 60 votes to shut him down.
No, they don't.
So for the moment, Don't Ask, Don't Tell remains. Eric in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, hello. How are you? I just like to make a couple comments. I'm a Vietnam vet. And it's funny to me that everybody that wants Don't Ask, Don't Tell probably didn't serve in the service, especially in the Navy or on a submarine. I understand that, you know, in
you
the
mean the
70s,
people who want it repealed, right? You mean the people who want it repealed haven't served.
So all I know is when I didn't have a choice to go in the military, and everybody that was found out to be gay was, in fact, thrown out at the time. Today, it's a full voluntary force. So it may have changed, but I would say a lot of these career military people are old school. You know, America's gone through some major changes with our you know, ethical standards. So all I can say is everybody, you know, they're willing to overlook illegal aliens or ready to overlook everything. And unless you've got to serve on a Navy ship under the ocean for 30 days with a gay person when you don't choose that lifestyle, it's not so easy to make that determination.
When you say if you don't choose that lifestyle, you think the gay sailor is going to jump the straight sailor?
When I was in the service, there were some incidents between gay men and non-gay men in the Navy.
And what do you think happens to those gay men who do any unwanted touching or flirting whatsoever? They would get kicked out of the military, as they should.
Yes, they did, and as well as when I was in, they may have gone thrown overboard. All I can say is you cannot force ethical standards on everybody in the military by the wave of a pen. Okay, there's a lot of Americans that rightly so, you know, in their religious beliefs and their lifestyle, do not believe in that.
Eric, thank you for your call. We appreciate it.
I would just like to say to that our military correspondent, David Wood, who just got back not long ago from Afghanistan from his latest trip there, made a point of asking every single military person he interviewed while he was there for a long time about this, and he didn't find a single person who said they objected to doing away with it.
One more thing before we run out of time. Charles Rangel, now officially censured.
Right.
Other people are being censored. Charles Rangel is being censured by the House of Representatives for the various things that they determined that he did. Rangel at that moment yesterday.
I know in my heart that I'm not going to be judged by this Congress, but I'm going to be judged by my life, my activities, my contributions to society.
Now, Melinda, we have people like Robert Morgenthau saying he was railroaded. Peter King, conservative Republican House member from Long Island, saying censure was too stiff a punishment, that nobody's previously in the House been censured for this relatively minor set of transgressions, where the House prosecutor said that he wasn't corrupt and was more guilty of sloppy bookkeeping than anything else. Is this an example of the Democrats trying now to look squeaky clean, and that's why they went all the way to censure rather than reprimand, or is it not as political as that?
I think it was done with a lot of sadness, so I personally don't feel it was as political as that. I've never seen Nancy Pelosi look sadder than when she was reading the charges, and I mean, it's a very sad moment. And I thought it was quite touching for what Peter King said, you know, that I've never seen Charlie Rangel treat anyone with disrespect. Let's take a step back. But, you know, King also had that same response to Bill Clinton. He was one of the few Republicans who did not agree with impeaching Clinton. So I don't know. I think that there's certainly an argument on both sides, but I think there was a feeling that what happened was pretty flagrant. There was a lot to look at. To me, the most egregious thing was the keeping the rent control department in New York for campaign activities. I mean, that's, you know, housing is an issue that touches his constituents directly. So I thought that was
Well, his constituents reelected him 80%, and those apartments probably would have gone to market rate rather than going to somebody else for rent stabilization. But there's left with Charles Rangel. You think Peter King has a secret? No, I'm just kidding. Melinda Henneberger, Editor-in-Chief of Politics Daily, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the problem with bail to determine which suspects go to jail. Stay with us.